The Human Adventure. The University of Chicago, in collaboration with the Columbia Broadcasting System, presents The Human Adventure.
The story of the birth of a baby.
The Human Adventure, for the first time on radio, tells the story of childbirth, takes you behind the scenes of a modern lying-in hospital, reveals the actual medical treatment of expectant mothers. This series of broadcasts represents the work of universities. We bring you the exclusive accounts of research in all fields of knowledge. A university's job is to learn, and you and all mankind may benefit from its knowledge. The universities are your investment in a better life.
Time for breakfast this morning. I'm late.
Well, sit down and have a cup of coffee. I poured it out already.
Thanks, honey. Where's my briefcase?
On the table in the living room.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, why didn't I put those papers in last night?
Tom, there's something...
Well, I'll just carry them in my hand while I get in the train. Still too hot.
Tom, I know you're in a hurry, but there's something we must talk about.
Yeah?
I've suspected it now for a couple of weeks.
Huh?
Well, yesterday...
There's my train. So long, honey.
Tom, don't run away.
I'll be home early. Meet me at the station at 5:55.
Tom, I have something to tell you.
Well, for Pete's sake, what is it, darling? I'll miss that train.
I'm going to have a baby.
Can't you... Huh? No.
Yes.
Sure?
Sure.
Gosh.
Today in America, June 29th, 1940, from now, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, until the clock in our studio strikes 9, about 140 babies will be born. The greatest human adventure in the experience of man will take place. And this year in America, more than 2 million new lives will breathe the air of their strange new world. And those that survive will grow to build new cities, till black earth sing new songs.
I guess my wife's all right, isn't she, nurse?
Perfect. Just a normal delivery.
She seems awful tired.
Oh, naturally. Everyone is tired after labor. Now she needs rest. You were very wise, Mr. Johnson, to bring your wife to the hospital so early. If every mother was as careful and came for her prenatal care regularly before the baby was born, we'd all have healthier babies and sounder mothers.
How long will she be here, nurse?
About 10 days.
Gosh.
Now, no work for Mrs. Johnson until she's strong again.
Oh, sure thing.
And plenty of milk and vegetables as well as rest. These next few weeks are just as important as the last 9 months.
Well, thanks to all of you here for all you've done.
Oh, don't thank us. From the moment your wife registered in this lying-in hospital 8 months ago, that baby was ours as well as yours.
A pleasant scene, a typical scene, even a trite scene, where Mr. and Mrs. Johnson are lucky enough to share the advantages of one of our few modern lying-in hospitals in America. Careful prenatal care, expert obstetrical deliveries, close observation and scientific isolation of mother and child after birth. The story of this accomplishment begins many years ago in a Viennese hospital with a man called Ignaz Philipp Semmelweis of the University of Vienna. Vienna, 1847, the number one obstetric clinic of the General Hospital. Of every 9 women that give birth, 1 dies of childbed fever. And while women wail, A priest with a black robe and a tinkling bell walks through the ward of life and death, mumbling the last sacrament.
Doctor!
Herr Doctor! Please! Let me go home! Let me have my child at home! I will die here! I know it! Please, Dr. Semmelweis!
Courage and rest, gnädige Frau.
Rest? How can I rest when I know I shall die like the others? How can I rest, Herr Doctor, when I'm all day reminded of death? Oh, that bell. The priest's bell.
Dr. Schulz!
Now, Dr. Semmelweis?
Do me a favor. Ask that priest not to march through these wards again with his death bell. These poor women will go mad.
Ja, Dr. Semmelweis.
And Dr. Schulz! Do these women a favor. Wash your hands before you come into the wards.
My hands? But they are clean.
Dr. Schulz, where were you before you made your rounds in number one clinic?
Anatomy laboratory.
So?
They are performing an autopsy on the woman who died with fever.
You came directly then to this clinic to examine the women in labor?
Hey, Dr. Semmelweis, I object to your constant questions. You are not an attorney, nor am I a criminal.
That remains to be seen. Did you wash your hands after you examined the unfortunate woman in the autopsy laboratory?
My hands are clean. See for yourself.
I see nothing. You must remember, Herr Doctor, that even a doctor's hands may carry disease.
They found Dr. Semmelweis with the chief of the obstetrical staff, Dr. Klein.
Semmelweis, you are making a fetish of childbed fever.
Since when is death a fetish?
The causes of childbed fever are well known. Bad diet and the natural fear and chilling of women in labor. Even Virchow will tell you it is bad air. Atmospheric, cosmic, telluric influence.
Ah, fancy word ignorance. The disease is caused by dirt. Decomposed animal matter and filth on a doctor's hands. If your interns would take the trouble of washing their hands with chlorine water, fewer women would die in your hospital.
Yes, and how do you know, Herr Dr. Semmelweis?
I tell you how I know. We have two obstetric clinics, number one and number two. In number one, the mortality rate is 11.3%. In number two, the mortality rate is only 2.7%. In number one clinic, the women are examined by fingers of interns contaminated in the autopsy lab after they have worked on fatal cases of childbed fever. Clinic number two, only midwives attend deliveries. Midwives never go near the morgue. Therefore, less contamination, fewer deaths.
Very pretty hypothesis proving nothing.
Oh, you almost talk like a scientist, Herr Dr. Klein.
Semmelweis, for a long time I have been thinking of discharging you for your stupidity and insults.
That will eliminate Semmelweis, but not childbed fever. My appointment here ends a year from now. Let me prove to you in that year that my hypothesis is correct. Whatever our personal differences, remember, you are a scientist, Klein. Let me experiment. Let me wash the hand of your staff in clinic number one.
And Semmelweis did wash their hands clean of death. The next morning, all the doctors in clinic number one were assembled before him.
Meine Herren Doktoren, these are the orders. I want the delivery room spotless. Clean sheets, sterile clothing, sterile sponges, antiseptic instruments, and above all, clean your hands. Soap and water alone may not remove the poison. Soak your hands in a solution of chloride of lime. That is all.
And that was all. The simplest clue sometimes helps solve the most baffling mysteries. In only 3 weeks, Dr. Semmelweis reported
the mortality rate from childbed fever dropped from 11.3% to only 3%.
And in 1 year, he reported,
mortality rate dropped from 3% to the all-time low of the Vienna lying-in hospital. Only a little over 1%.
And in that same year, had Dr. Klein reported,
Semmelweis, you are discharged.
I've been expecting this, Dr. Klein. But I've proven my point. We know how to wipe out childbed fever. We have saved the lives of thousands of women.
You are impetuous. You quarrel and cannot take orders.
Wrong again, Dr. Klein. I can take orders. Goodbye.
Disheartened, Semmelweis left Vienna and for a time filled the chair of professor of obstetrics at the University of Budapest. There he continued his experiments, successful experiments against death. But before the day that a backward and bigoted world would accept his amazing but simple discovery, Semmelweis, the realist, who hated obvious sentiment, became a martyr. While working on childbed fever, he died of that same septic infection. Sir William J. Sinclair of the University of Manchester wrote the epitaph.
We deplore the martyrdom of Semmelweis, but we can find some comfort in the reflection that he did not struggle in vain, and that he did not suffer in vain. The whole civilized world was soon to enjoy the fruits of his discovery. He had thrown the light of scientific progress into a region hitherto shrouded in the darkness of Egyptian night.
Today in America, in modern hospitals, cleanliness has all but banished childbed fever. The obstetrical procedure of the up-to-date physician throughout the country has made this dread disease a matter of ancient history. Today in America, in the city of Chicago, there stands one of the most modern lying-in hospitals in the world, founded by the courage and perseverance of the famous Professor Joseph B. DeLee of the University of Chicago. It carries on the work of Semmelweis and countless other university scientists who have added to our knowledge of obstetrics, who have given their lives that death and pain may no longer plague mothers. Dr. DeLee emphasized the fact that the ordinary general hospital is not the safest place for women in labor.
If babies must be delivered in a hospital, then it must be a hospital built for that one purpose only, far away and free from other sickness and death.
Today in America, a woman applies for admittance to a lying-in hospital. The first step, the examination by a doctor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Doctor.
You're...
Mary Johnson. Oh, I mean Mrs. Tom Johnson.
Oh, yes. This your first baby?
Yes. We want a baby very much, but I'm a little frightened.
There's nothing to be afraid of, Mrs. Johnson. To bring a baby into the world is a perfectly normal and beautiful thing, especially if the woman is well and happy.
Oh, well, I feel fine.
Good. Now, just a few simple questions, and then we will give you a thorough physical examination.
All right.
How old are you, Mrs. Johnson?
26.
Ever been sick? Any operations?
Well, I had my tonsils out when I was a little girl. Otherwise, I'm all there.
Been to your dentist recently?
Last year.
You'd better see him again.
All right.
Care of the teeth is very important. How long ago do you think your baby's life began?
Oh, about 2 months ago.
Oh, nurse.
Yes, doctor.
This is Mary Johnson.
Oh, how do you do? I'm Miss Ross.
How do you do?
Prepare Mrs. Johnson for complete examination. Height, weight, urine specimen, Wasserman.
Very well, doctor.
That's to determine venereal disease, Mrs. Johnson.
Oh, yes, I know. Tom and I had a Wasserman test done before we were married.
Good. We will also take measurements of your pelvic bones. That's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And after the examination, we will prescribe proper diet and exercise.
I see.
So that the baby is properly nourished and develops normally.
My goodness. Quite a fuss over a baby that hasn't even been born yet.
Yes, quite a fuss. But the baby, though not born, is already a living thing. Both of you need care. That baby is not only yours now, but ours as well. And we're going to watch that baby.
And so the first examination was over. Mary Johnson, mother, was now the concern of the doctors and scientists of the lying-in hospital. Prenatal care, the first stage, was given Mary as often as necessary, She and her baby were under the watchful eye of a doctor, benefiting from all his knowledge of modern scientific research. Research that would bring a mother and child safely through the greatest of all human adventures, birth. Further examinations followed at intervals of a few weeks or even weekly. 2 months later...
How do you feel, Mary?
Just fine, but I'm awfully hungry all the time.
Well, and that baby has an appetite. Do you ever have headaches?
No, but my back aches some.
Dizziness?
No, but I sometimes trip when I walk. Tom gets awfully scared.
Nothing to worry about. The baby is getting heavier and probably unbalances you.
Oh.
Nurse?
Yes, doctor. Why, hello, Mary.
Hello.
My, don't you look well today.
Thank you, Helen.
And nurse, tell Mary about a proper support to help her carry her baby and ease her back.
Yes, doctor.
And then prepare her for another complete examination.
The seventh month. Position of the fetus, correct. Now watch your diet, Mary.
Yes, doctor.
Plenty of minerals, calcium, iron. That means milk. Plenty of milk and eggs, meat, fruits, and vegetables.
Milk, eggs, meat, fruit, and vegetables.
Yes. You need energy. But watch your weight, Mary. 20-pound increase is just right.
All right.
Nurse,
yes,
prepare
doctor.
Mrs. Johnson for complete examination.
The eighth month. Fetal heartbeat. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Beats steady and strong. That's fine. Your own pulse is good, too, Mary. Blood pressure, 110. Everything in shape.
Oh, I'm glad.
Rest and exercise now, Mary.
Yes, doctor.
In the next few weeks, the pains will come. Don't be frightened. It is a normal way of childbirth.
I'll try not to be.
We'll speak to your husband about bringing you to the hospital in plenty of time. And nurse?
Yes, doctor.
Give Mrs. Johnson a list of clothing the baby will need.
The lying-in hospital. A baby is born.
My mask, please, nurse. Keep on scrubbing, Jones.
You know, doctor, this scrubbing your hands for 10 minutes is the worst chore in a profession.
Well, when you've delivered as many babies as I have, you'll get used to it. There. Time's up.
Here's your gown, doctor.
Right. Now, how's Mrs. Johnson?
She's had her shower bath. Birth passage sterilized.
Did she eat her lunch?
Every bit.
Good. Gloves, please.
Yes, doctor.
How regular are her pains now?
Every 3 minutes, doctor.
Oh, we'd better go in, then. Hello, Mary. And how are you?
Well, I'm sort of afraid.
You mustn't be. If you're afraid, your muscles contract and the baby will only come harder. Remember all the things I told you about your body, how it is built, and how a baby is born. Then you won't be afraid. Anesthesia ready, Dr. Brown?
Ready.
Apply only when I give you the word, not before. She's a healthy girl, and this will be a natural birth. Blood pressure?
120.
Fetal heartbeat?
Steady.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Contractions are quite normal. All right, Brown. When I give the word, when I see the baby's head, apply anesthesia.
All set.
Anesthesia. Ah, beautiful. Beautiful.
A baby is born, and a young man stands bewildered at the bedside of his wife.
happy, darling?
Oh, yes. But I'm pretty tired.
Well, I'm kind of tired myself.
It's a girl, Tom.
Oh, that's all right.
But she weighs over 8 pounds. Did you see her, Tom?
Oh, yeah. I saw her.
Does she look like me, Tom?
Well, you see, I wasn't very close. It was behind that glass window.
You're not disappointed because it's a girl, are you, Tom?
Don't be silly. I'm happy. Happy you're okay. It's a wonderful baby. I guess those wrinkles kind of smooth out after a while.
Oh, Tom, your face.
Gosh, what did I say now? Don't cry, Mary.
I'm not crying. I'm laughing.
For the first time on radio, you have heard the story of childbirth. Why was this story told? Professor Howard W. Haggard of Yale University answers for us.
The position of women in any civilization is an index of the advancement of that civilization. Accordingly, the advances and regressions of civilization are nowhere seen more clearly than in the story of childbirth.
All that has gone before paints a pleasant portrait of motherhood in the United States. Unfortunately, our task is not complete without the cold shower of fact. Equipped as our scientists are with all the knowledge and experience of a century of careful research, here is the situation. Says Dr. Fred Adair, professor of obstetrics and chief of staff of the University of Chicago's Lying-In Hospital,
more than 10,000 mothers died in childbirth in the United States in the year 1939. The percentage of maternal deaths in this country was one of the highest in the civilized world. 1 to 2 mothers die for every 275 to 300 births. 3/4 of maternal deaths in this country are due to controllable causes. Of the 275 babies born, 13 will die before they're a year old, and about 1/2 this same number are born dead.
This is a portrait of the American Madonna and child, painted with cold figures in the year of our Lord, 1940. And there is no excuse for this portrait. The best scientific thought and the best scientific care are at the command of the prospective mothers of America. It remains for society to help them reap the rewards of scientific achievement. And while half the civilized world is telling a story of destruction and death, we today in America pause to tell the story of birth, the greatest human adventure. Universities are places of research, storehouses of knowledge. They represent your investment in a better life. Each year, American universities spend $50 million to support 30,000 research projects. Does that sound like a lot of money? Well, let's see. 30,000 research projects divided into $50 million equals only $4.50 per day per project. For this small sum, you and all mankind receive the benefits of centuries of knowledge applied to modern problems, to modern living. You are the stockholders in the libraries, the laboratories, the quiet halls of learning that are America's universities. You are the beneficiaries in the human adventure.
Next week, the human adventure tells the story of the Black Death, a scourge which swept over Europe with a silent force more deadly than 50,000 bombers. Listen next week to the story of the Black Death. The human adventure is presented each week at this same time in the interest of learning over a coast-to-coast network by the University of Chicago in collaboration with the Columbia Broadcasting System.